Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you very much for chanting Hare Krishna so enthusiastically. I was going to ask you to chant with me, but you already did it. So if I ask you, you'll probably chant even louder. Is it? Please chant. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So no need to say anything, we'll just have a kirtan. That's the highest attainment. No need to, that's it. I'm supposed to speak on the highest attainment, and chanting Hare Krishna is that. That's it, already done. So thank you very much, and nice to see you, and see you all again some other time. Hare Krishna. Well, I suppose I should say something. We should say something. Yeah, everyone's saying something. Everyone has got a lot to say. Everyone thinks himself to be very important. I suppose I think I'm very important too, sitting up here on top, higher than all of you. Who should we actually listen to? That person who can clearly tell us what is the highest attainment. Who is that person? Well, the best person is Krishna. He is Adi Guru, Jagat Guru, Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru. Guru is one who points us toward the highest attainment. What is the highest attainment? Well, that's obvious. Mount Everest. It's the highest point, right? Now you can go beyond. You can go to the moon, some people say. Or why bother with the moon? You can go to Mars. What is the highest? What is your ambition? Everyone has some ambition. If Mitt Romney wins in the upcoming presidential election, he will think this is the highest attainment. So even if he gets that, and even if he gets a double term, he'll be booted out. So after maximum 8 years. What is the highest attainment? Most people are not aiming so high as to become the President of the United States. Anyone here trying to become Shauri Prabhu? You want to be President? No. It's bad. It's actually a very bad job. It's the worst job in the whole country. You know why? And this is not a joke. It's really heavy. Someone should tell these two people who are lining up. How many are in the presidential race? Two, huh? They only have two, three? Two, just two this time. Well, according to Shastra, the ruler of the country has to take 1/6 of the karmic reactions of the citizens. And if you consider that the average American in a single day runs up enough karmic reactions to suffer for a long, long time, it's not a good job at all. Of course, if you come to the president and stop all the cow slaughter, that would be a good move. Anyway, what is the highest attainment? Some people are aiming to become rich. How rich is rich? We used to have the term millionaire, but it's become fairly meaningless nowadays because even a not very special house costs $1 million. So now, maybe to be a billionaire. Just like in India, they used to say lakhpati, but you know, every beggar at the stoplight is a lakhpati. Maybe they earn a lakh a day. Not that much, but they earn... How much are you telling me, Gauranga Prasad? They're earning how much? 5,000 rupees a week in Hyderabad? 5,000 rupees a week. The beg... Close to 5,000 rupees a week. The beggars. And you're telling me of one who, at the stoplight in Secunderabad, goes with his crutches, and then when he's finished, he just puts his crutches under his arm and walks home. So what is the highest attainment? To be rich, to be famous, to be powerful. Some people, they're in academia, they want to be very knowledgeable, be a PhD, double PhD. What are the Aishwarya, Samagrasha, Viryasha, Yashasha, Shriha? To be very beautiful, do a yoga class, lose weight, take some vitamin E tablets, have a facelift, be beautiful, Sriha, Jnana. No, well, there are six opulences of Bhagavan. One of them is Vairagya, but we don't find people are trying to become very renounced. But different people have different ambitions as to what is the highest attainment. But we can consider that whatever we attain within this world, within this life, we ultimately come to one of three positions. We either turn into ashes, or microbes, or birdstool, if we identify with the body. That means the body is either burned and becomes ashes, or it is buried and gradually decomposes. That means it gets eaten by microbes. Or, for the Parsis, they put the bodies on top of the pillars and the vultures come and eat the bodies. So the body ends up as birdstool. And if you die in an explosion, then your body becomes mincemeat. Or could be eaten by a lion and then you become lion stool. This is the fate of the body. And for the soul, there may be the president of the country, but as we can say in Hindi, aaj ka raja kal ka kutta. Aaj ka badshah kal ka billi. The king today is the dog tomorrow. This is not meant to insult any leader, but it's just a fact under the laws of nature that it's called the Sangsar Chakra. Someone who has a very high position, they again go to a low position. One gets a high position by performing some pious activities. That's why if some highly respected person, some leader comes, if the governor of North Carolina comes here, we should offer him respect because he's attained that position. What to speak of the president of the United States, he's attained that position as the result of some pious activities, and we can respect that. But we also know that someone who gets a high position, if they don't have knowledge of the highest attainment, if they then they act without knowledge of the laws of nature, the laws of God. If they're not a Rajarshi like Yudhishthira or Parikshit, then they perform sinful activities, or they govern over sinful people, just like the President of the United States is maybe well-intentioned and has the interest, he may really want to do something for the benefit of the people of America. But without knowing the laws of God, the laws of nature, what he thinks is beneficial for them, maybe actually the opposite of what is beneficial for them. For instance, he may think that, well, if we can supply cheaper meat, that will be good for the people. But actually it's not, because they have to incur severe karmic reactions for doing so. And by pursuing the interests of the American people, that's just the way material life is, that if you take the, or if you represent one party, then this material world, the whole attitude is one of friends and enemies. That is unavoidable in this material world. So to act for the benefit of America, one may have to act in a way, thank you, that is not at all appreciated by other people, just like many Muslims in the world are very angry with America. They have a very bad feeling toward America. And it seems that American people can't understand that, but they cite that, well, America's policies is due to their policies, however well-intentioned the American government may think themselves to be, the fact is that they've, by their policies, they've killed over 1 million Muslims in the last few years. So it's not surprising if they, the Muslim people, are upset by that, and very upset. So I'm not making a political statement here. I'm just talking about the realities of this world and how someone who attains a high position, because of their lack of knowledge of Atma-tattva, the science of the soul, then even with the best of intentions, they may end up going to a very low position. And that's why, Aaj ka raja kal ka kutta. It's not just a joke, but it's a fact. That someone who is in a very high position, by the very nature of the cycle of birth and death, they must come to a low position. It's very common all over the world that someone works very hard and they become rich, and then their children, who are born into wealth, who never had to struggle for that, they squander all the money. And then they start off life rich because they're born in a rich family, and then they end up poor. So what is the highest attainment? If we are to ascertain this, first of all, we have to go beyond the superficial. We are in today's materialistic society, we are trained, educated, some people might call it brainwashed, to think that if we get what is called a good education and we're well behaved and we work in a company and we're ambitious or we become a doctor or whatever, then that is the best attainment of our life. To be a good, dutiful citizen, working hard, earning money, and that's it. And you can earn money by doing business, which is nowhere in the world is business as well respected as in America. To do business in America is considered something very proper and right, whereas in other, well, at least in Britain where I was born, many people consider business somewhat skeptically. They think it is some kind of greedy or exploitive enterprise. In India, its business is not considered badly. It's considered the business titans, like their Tata, Hinduja, Birla, and so on. They're well-respected people. So, doing business, being a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, or whatever, this is considered respectable. Good attainment. In India, as you all know, those of you who are Indian, there's so much talk for the children from the beginning of their life. They hear this word success, success, success. You have to be a success. Don't be a failure. A failure in terms of modern American culture would be getting a job in McDonald's instead. But my son should be a doctor, an engineer. My son or daughter should be a doctor, an engineer, a lawyer, something like this. Recently I was told that in India, people, they're telling their children, don't bother going to study, becoming a... Mostly they want their children to be doctors or engineers. These are considered most prestigious. But what I heard now, they're saying, don't even bother going to school, just join Congress or BJP, become a politician. Better, you get money much more easily and much more of it. Of course, you could also end up in Tihar jail. That's also quite possible, but the idea is that you have to have money, money, money. That's the idea. That is the highest attainment. But it's not. We meet so many people who have money. You're all successes by Indian standards. To come to America is to be a success. I've seen, I used to live in Bangladesh and we'd see people who, from the village, who would go to work in Dubai. And in Dubai, there'd be a toilet cleaner or something like this. But when they come back to Bangladesh, to their village, once every 2 years in Bangladesh, they're considered a great success. Because the money they earn there, in terms of Bangladeshi taka, it allows them to build a house for their family. And that's to build a house with bricks, instead of the traditional mud house, that's considered very prestigious. So what is the highest attainment? What is really the highest attainment? Is it to have money? Well, it doesn't make you happy, it doesn't necessarily do you any good. Probably we'd all rather be sitting here in this air conditioned, everything's air conditioned. I presume this is air conditioned, everything's air conditioned. This air conditioned hall and sitting in some ramp. If you all didn't have the money to purchase and maintain this facility here, then we might be discussing in some ramshackle hut made out of twigs and waste plastic sacks. As many people in India today live, isn't it? Huge number of people. If you fly from the south into Bombay, you'll see miles and miles of people living in shanty towns, what they call them, Jhoparpati, slums. And on the railway tracks, you'll find, not on the railway track, but just at the side, you'll find many people living in houses made of sticks and plastic. Well, no, those houses are more on the construction sites. If you don't have money, then you live in some not very attractive place, full of mosquitoes, and next to the railway track means where people go to relieve themselves in the morning. So this is smelly place. So we'd rather be here, isn't it? It's a nicer place to be, there's no doubt. To have money makes a nicer facility, makes life more pleasant. Getting the money is maybe not so pleasant. What you have to do to get the money. We see that most people, they spend most of their life doing something that they don't really want to do. They're working in a job that they don't really want to do it, but they're doing it because it gives them money. It's an unfortunate situation in the modern world. But when you get the money, then you can go and, after working so hard, you can go and sleep in a place which is more comfortable than people who don't earn so much money. Although when you're asleep, it doesn't make that much difference whether you're in a fancy place or a junky place. It's the same experience. So having money, we're not saying it's bad, but it's overrated. The idea that by having money, life will be good, it's overrated. And then the question comes, of what happens after death. And if you consider it, this is a massive question, isn't it? What happens after death? It's a massive question. I mean, the most influential people in the history of the world as we know it have, who are they? Krishna, who spoke Bhagavad Gita, Buddha, who gave spiritual teachings, Jesus, Muhammad. These are all the most influential people in the history of the world, not any president of the United States or any military or political leader, because they're always military and political leaders, but they come and go. But the whether or not you believe in what they say, the most influential people have all, whose influence goes on generation after generation over thousands of years. And politicians come and go, and even different philosophical outlooks come and go, like Marx and Engels, their teachings were very influential over a large section of the human race throughout most of the 20th century, and they still have some influence. But even though communism has collapsed in most places, it's very interesting that even though during the Soviet rule of, the Soviet rule of the Soviet Union, there was systematic propagation of atheism. I first went to Russia in 1986, which was really toward the end of Soviet rule. And we found so many people in their apartments, they had icons, Christian icons. So many people still believed in God despite generations of propaganda against it. So the point I'm making is that the most influential people in the world, and whose influence is still tremendous, in Charlotte, you must all know, Billy Graham. He got his inspiration from Jesus. So all the most influential teachers or people in the history of the world have all taught that there is existence after death. Of course, Buddha, it's a little different in as much as actually most of Buddhist teachings came after Buddha, because he didn't really teach very much. His teachings were very simple. I'm not undermining his teachings by saying that, but he kept it, what he said was very simple and basic, and later so many Buddhist teachers came. But anyway, they all taught that there is life after death, just to simplify without getting into Buddhism. They all taught that there is life after death, and that what we do in this life affects our destination after death, and that life is eternal. It doesn't terminate with the termination of the body. So when you say that the body will end up as microbes, or or if you're thrown in the river, sometimes, have you seen in the rivers in India, the dead bodies floating down? So it may end up as turtles come and eat it, or fish come and eat it. It may end up as the excrement of fish or turtles or birds, or may end up as ashes. That is what happens to the body. But all the great teachers teach that there is life after death, and what we do in this life affects our future after death, and that the highest attainment is nothing of this world. It's not becoming very rich or very powerful or very famous or very beautiful. But there is much more than that. So that at least in the, pretty much in most of the world, this very question is deliberately neglected. The schools are not allowed to teach about life after death because they consider it unscientific. Although there's no way to prove that there is life after death, there's also no way to disprove it. And in fact, if we're talking about spiritual life, the very nature of the spiritual is that it's not provable or disprovable by any material means. And therefore to say that it's unscientific to believe in the soul is true in the material sense, because material science deals with that which is measurable by the senses, by the mundane senses, that which can be seen, touched, smelled, heard, tasted. But spirit, by its very definition, is beyond the material. So we have to learn about that from self-realized teachers. And if we say that, well, we just don't believe in that, what we are saying is that all the great spiritual teachers who by their behavior and have, by their character, have demonstrated renunciation from the world, a sense of enlightenment that is beyond the petty, beyond the greed and lust of this world, we just have to reject. They're all just fools and maybe rascals also for misleading people. So it is a great question, what happens after death? If we just throw it all out and say, well, I don't believe there's life after death. Well, you cannot believe. But whether we believe in it or not does not alter the fact of whether or not there is life after death, right? It doesn't depend on what we believe. It's not that people who believe in life after death, they continue to live after death. And those who don't believe in it, they just gone, like a candle snuffed out, never to be relit. It's not a question of belief. It doesn't depend on our belief. Many people think that, well, religion is just a question of belief. But that's a very flimsy platform. What does it matter what we believe? We're tiny, tiny little living beings. And this life is tiny living beings in a massive universe. And this life is just a blip in time. We have information from the Vedic literature that Lord Brahma, his lifespan is that of the whole of the universe, which is trillions of years. So in the whole time that we live and born, it might be the time that Lord Brahma blinks. Blink. And then your whole... And there are some living beings also that there are some... bugs, that they only live for a few hours. But for them, that's a very long life, and they're going here and there, eating, mating, producing offspring. It's all finished in a few hours. So if we consider how small and insignificant we are, and then we put so much we place so much weight on what I believe in. I believe. Oh, who are you, sir? What does it matter? Or if people ask me, well, what do you believe in? I tell them, it doesn't matter what I believe in, because I'm a tiny little being. But we should try to know what is the actual fact. What is the actual nature of reality? What is the truth? That we should try to understand. That is independent of our belief. You may say, well, we can't know that. Well, why not? We are, by our own endeavors, we can't find out, that's true, simply by our own endeavor. But to say that no one can know, why should we say that? Were all the great spiritual teachers, were they all just simply, completely... even though they appeared in different times and places and they all spoke basically the same message, are they all wrong or just in some big they're just experiencing some great hallucination? Were they just cheating people? Or did they have something real to communicate to us? You have to choose that. What Krishna taught in the Bhagavad Gita is quite understandable. It's not, Krishna doesn't say, well, you just believe this and then that's all finished. But Krishna gives a lucid understanding, a very clear way by which we can understand the existence of the soul separate from the body. If we accept that, obviously this body is temporary, but if there's a soul, that means the soul is eternal. You can give a riddle. What is both living and dead? And the answer is a living body. It's living, but actually it's dead because it's only chemicals, and the chemicals don't have life. What makes the body alive is the presence of the soul. That's why in any language throughout the world, if someone dies, we say they have gone away or they have passed away. Chalega in Hindi, Chalegeche in Bengali. That's, I know three languages. Probably we have some Telugu people or Tamil people here who could say it in their language. And well, then you say, well, that's Indian languages. Well, bring any language. And you could say it's a euphemism, but why is it the same all over the world? They've gone away. Who went away? It's the same body. The same body that until a few minutes ago you related to and you were talking, all of a sudden, gone away. What? No, it's here. What has gone away? Intrinsically, we all know that the person is different from the body. But we're not informed, so we can't really understand it. Another point here is that the same body, a living person, if you burn them alive, that's a grave crime, isn't it? But the same body, when it's dead, if you don't burn it or bury it, it's a crime. What's that? There's obviously a very great difference. The difference is gone away. So as I was saying, Krishna explains this in Bhagavad Gita with a couple of examples. Dehino smiñyata dehe kaumarang yovanang jara tata dehantara praptihi. Krishna says, he gives the example that we see, young children, they become older, young men, young women, then they become old, and then they die. These are all different phases, but it's the same person. The young child, the body changes to become gradually an old person, but it's the same person. The body has changed. The body is changing always. The mother, just like most of you are from India, so if you go home to India, I suppose you think of India as your home, even if you're American citizens, you go home and your mother is there, even if she hasn't seen you for 10 years, she immediately recognizes. So actually, we're told from medical science or pathology or whatever, that within the body, within 10 years, I believe it's 7 years, they say, every single atom within the body is replaced in the course of 7 years. So if we think that this body is me, then I'm not the same person I was 7 years ago. We may say, well, the genetic code is the same, but I am not a genetic code. Genetic codes don't have identity, feelings, ambitions, likes, dislikes. So the body is always changing, The mind is always changing from moment to moment. And throughout life, generally we find that children are somewhat boisterous and they cool down when they get older mentally. And people's attitude, the mind is always changing. So what has stayed the same is the person. So if the person is a constant principle, whereas the body and mind are always changing, then this is all from Bhagavad Gita, this verse, or three parts of a verse which I just quoted, that the body and mind are always changing, but the person remains the same, then what happened? The body is always changing, death is another change of the body. But that doesn't mean that the person never changed throughout all the other changes. So when the change, which is called death, comes, then the person remains. The person has always been unchanged. It's always been the same person, although their mental state and bodily state may change all the time. So then you may say, well, what happens? Tata dehantara praptihi. One gets another body. And Krishna gives another example in the Bhagavad Gita about this. Vasangsi jirnani yathavihaya. Navani grihnati tataparani. Then what's the next line? None of you know this verse? I also. Tata navani. I also forgot it. Anyway. Navani grihnati navani dehi. So the example is there that just as clothes cover this body, they're a covering on the body. They're not the body, but they're a covering. So in the same way, the body is a covering on the soul. So when, just as when the clothes get old and worn out, they require to be changed. So when the body gets old and worn out, it requires to be changed. So that example is there. So this is, these are examples that Krishna gives by which we can understand that the soul is different to the body. The soul continues to exist after the death of the body. Now, Krishna goes on to explain further in Bhagavad Gita that we are trapped within the cycle of birth and death due to our... The nature of the soul is to be happy. But we are trapped in a cycle of birth and death, a cycle of suffering, of struggle, birth, death, old age and disease, because of the illusion of identifying ourselves with the body. So, the highest attainment, now when we say the highest, one thing to be understood, the highest in English means the highest, and it's the same in Sanskrit also. But there is also the highest, and then in Sanskrit there's the higher highest, paramparataram, and then, paramam. So there's the highest, the higher highest, and the really highest highest. So that may sound, well, that's cheating or that's not correct, but anyway, there are different outlooks. So the highest attainment is to get free from the suffering of birth and death. The highest attainment is to come out of the birth and death, and then we come to the spiritual position. So that's one way of seeing the highest attainment, but there's more. The highest attainment is to come to the platform of permanent, eternal, permanent and eternal means the same thing. Bliss. So what is that? Well, there are different spiritualists. They perceive the highest bliss on different levels. Many think that this position, just to become free from birth and death, that is in and of itself the highest attainment. In Buddhism, it's considered like that, although within Buddhism it's very difficult to say anything concrete at all. Within the Vedic culture, many think that the highest attainment is just to merge into a state of oneness with an unspoken or indescribable, impersonal reality. But the Vedic teachings teach of there is a higher attainment beyond that. Simply cessation of suffering, cessation of birth and death, that is not the highest. There's not the highest. There is a higher attainment than that. And that is the position of supreme bliss in the service of Krishna. Krishna roughly corresponds to what in English is called God. Krishna means the supreme person, supreme personality of Godhead. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriya gyana vairagya yoschaiva shannang bhaga itingana. That person, when we say person, does that mean a person like you and me? Yes, in some ways, but in other ways not also. That person who is supreme in all respects, supreme opulence, he owns everything. Supreme power, supreme fame and glory, supreme beauty, supreme knowledge, and supreme detachment from everything. Such a person is the supreme personality of Godhead. Who is that person? Sabhagavan Swayam Krishna. That person is Krishna. So that is the supreme personality of Godhead. He is Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. He is all truth, all goodness, all beauty. He is Satchit Ananda. He is again all truth. He is existence. All existence is based on him. He is supremely conscious of everything and full of bliss. So we cannot become Krishna, but our highest attainment, the highest we can go, how high can you go, is to be situated in service to Krishna. And we think, well, service, that's not the highest. Yes, it is the highest. That is our highest position, is to serve Krishna. To be the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a far greater position than being the master of the whole world. No one can be master of the whole world. But even if you could, you can't maintain that position and you can't properly control. Krishna rules not exactly by power, but by love. So that is the position of highest attainment, in love of Krishna, pure love of Krishna. And what is that service? Krishna, although the supreme, in all, supremely powerful, but he's the supreme loving, and he extends himself to every living being so that we can personally offer Krishna flower garlands, like you kindly offered me a flower garland. You can offer a flower garland to Krishna. You can feed Krishna. You can sing for Krishna and with Krishna. And maybe Krishna will sing for you. You can dance with Krishna. You can kiss Krishna. How about that? That is the highest attainment. To attain our position of pure bliss accepting our position of subordination to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's much, 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 much could be spoken about this. But the reality of our present situation, of almost everyone here, I guess, is that tomorrow morning is another beginning of another working day. So, for the sake of practicality, I'll just stop here speaking. And if there are any questions, I could take one or two questions. And I'll be speaking again tomorrow night if anyone would like to hear more about this. And there are others here in this town who can expound on all these principles if you'd like to know more about it. It's a great, great topic. Something we should all be very eager to learn about. How we can get free from birth and death. How we can get free from superficiality and attain the highest spiritual attainment. How can we do it? The process is simple. Chant the Hare Krishna mantra. So there we go, full circle. As I said at the beginning of the lecture, chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Yeah, so any question there?
It's good for asking questions again.
All right, well, if there are no questions. Yep, we have a question. All right, yes, please.
You know, when you came here, I saw people prostrating themselves before you and bowing to you. Do you encourage that kind of thing? Or, I mean, it says in the Gita, the learned man looks at a Brahmin, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and even a dog eater.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, yeah. What's that verse? Vidya vinaya sampanne brahmane kavihastini shuni chaiva shvapakecha pandita samadarshinaha. A learned person sees with equal vision. A learned and gentle brahmana, vidyavinaya sampanne brahmane, a cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog eater. Well, would any of you who prostrated themselves before me when I came in like to answer why you do that? I'll just make a little point here that clearly in Western culture that is unusual and often not much appreciated also. And in Islam it's considered haram. It's considered something very bad. The idea is that one should only offer respect to Allah, to God, and not to any person. Not that kind of respect. Yeah, so please. In respect of the Gita verse also.
Yeah, in Gita, Krishna also says, Tadvati Paripatena, Paripashana Sita. So he says, he tells us, Krishna tells us, Krishna is the speaker of Gita. And he tells us to submissively humble ourselves in front of a great teacher and inquire from him submissively.
The word is Pranipat, which literally means to bow down.
So it is Krishna has instructed in Gita itself to bow down humbly in front of a great personality and inquire from him submissively the true welfare of our soul.
Now, do I encourage that? Yes, I do so. Why should I do that? Does that mean I'm the most egoistic person in the world when we're supposed to be? It's actually a paradox. It's a paradoxical situation that Krishna also says, this is in Uddhava Gita, not in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Acharyang mang vijani yan navamanyeta karhichit namartya buddhya suyeta sarvadeva mayo guru. He says that the acharya or the guru should be understood to be myself and should not be disrespected in any way. Out of a malicious attitude, one should not think the acharya to be an ordinary human being, because the acharya is the representative of all the sub-gods, or of God himself. So, spiritual life means to understand I'm very, very small and God is very great. But God himself, Krishna, has given this system that one should respect the guru as good as Krishna, not that he is exactly Krishna himself, but because he gives the teachings of Krishna, then he is acting for our benefit in the same way that Krishna does. So this level of respect is to be inculcated so that people can imbibe these teachings for their own benefit. But if the guru himself thinks, now I'm very great and mighty, then he's not fit to be a guru. So internally, one should know oneself to be a humble servant. But it is required that the guru discipline and teach the disciples. And actually in Vedic culture, the guru means not only a sannyasi like myself. The first guru is the mother. And still in India today, in some parts, we see that people, and actually I've seen it in Bangladesh among Muslims also, they bow down. In Islam, you're not supposed to do that, but the culture is so strong, even after hundreds of years. They bow down regularly before their parents. There are still families in India, maybe not so many, where the children, they themselves may have children and grandchildren and be very successful in the world, but they'll come every morning and bow down before their parents. In the universities, not Delhi University, but still at BHU probably, and the students will bow down or at least touch the feet of the teachers. So that culture is there, that if one is very submissive to the teacher will be inclined to impart knowledge to the student for the student's benefit. And it creates a relationship also of an affectionate relationship, which is suitable for instruction. So I understand that some people may be put off by this, but you could also consider that if you were raised in a different culture, you would take that to be completely normal and proper, just as you may think it is improper to do it. Many people would think it's improper not to do it. So please try to understand the dynamics behind it. It's not meant for me to lord it over others or to put them down, but on the order of my guru, who I bow down to, it is part of the culture that helps not to put others down, but to help to them to come up. Anything else? Yes, please. We can have the microphone here.
Thank you, Maharaj. One question I had is, when I want to be pious, I want to be humble, I want to serve everyone, I want to live happily, why does I'm still unhappy? I have suffering, I have all kinds of problems in my life, work, family, everywhere, wherever I go.
I want to be good, I try to be good, but still I have problems. So the idea is that if I'm good, there should be no problems. Is it? Why is that? Well, we have the answer again in Bhagavad Gita in brief. Krishna says, Purusha sukha dukkhanam bhoktritve hetu ruchyate. the happiness and distress that we experience in this life is caused by ourselves. That what we have done in this life and in previous lives, we get the reactions to that. Now, one who sees with the eye of knowledge, he understands that what distress I'm getting, that is due to activities in a previous life and in this life. And also, if one is on the path of Krishna consciousness, endeavoring to fully surrender to Krishna, then he sees distresses as not only as reactions from previous activities, but also Krishna's mercy to remind me that I'm not supposed to be in this material world, because due to our conditioning in material existence, we're always thinking, well, maybe it's not so bad here after all, I could be happy. But distress in this material world, for a spiritualist, is an impetus to get out of it. And also, a person who's spiritually advancing thinks that, well, actually I deserve much more distress than this, but I'm only getting a little bit, Krishna is so kind. So that's another way of looking at it.